chapter 17, text 22 and 23. यस्याद्यासीत् गुणविग्रहो महान् विज्ञानधिष्ण्यो भगवान् अजः किल यत्सम्भवोऽहं त्रिवृत्तस्वतेजसा वैकारिकं तामसम् ऐन्द्रियं सृजे एते वयं यस्य वशे महात्मनः स्थिता शकुन्ता इह सूत्रयन्त्रिता महानहं वैकृत तामसेन्द्रियाः सृजाम सर्वे यदनुग्रहादिदम् यस्याद्यासीत् गुणविग्रहो महान् विज्ञानधिष्ण्यो भगवान् अजः किल यत्सम्भवोऽहं त्रिवृतस्वतेजसा वैकारिकं तामसम् ऐन्द्रियं सृजे एते वयं यस्य वशे महात्मनः स्थिता शकुन्त इव सूत्रयन्त्रिताः महानहं वैकृत तामसेन्द्रियाः सृजाम सर्वे यदनुग्रहादिदम् यस्याद्य आसीत् गुणविग्रहो महान् विज्ञानधिष्ण्यो भगवान् अजः किल यत्सम्भवोऽहं त्रिवृतस्वतेजसाः वैकारिकं तमसम् इन्द्रियं सृजे एते वयं यस्य वशे महात्मनः स्थिता शकुन्त इव सूत्रयन्त्रिताः महानहं वैकृत तामसेन्द्रियाः सृजाम सर्वे यदनुग्रहादिदम् एते वयं यस्य वशे महात्मनः सर्वे यदनुग्रहादिदम् स्थिता शकुन्त इव सूत्रयन्त्रिताः महानहं वैकृत तामसेन्द्रियाः सृजाम सर्वे यदनुग्रहादिदम् Yasya, from whom? Adya, the beginning. Asit, there was. Gunavigraha, the incarnation of the material qualities. Mahan, the total material energy. Vijnana, of full knowledge. Dhishnya, the reservoir. Bhagavan, the most powerful. Ajah, Lord Brahma. Kila, certainly. Yat, from whom? Sambhava, born. Aham, I. Trivrita, having three varieties according to the three modes of nature. Svatejasa, by my material strength. Vaikarikam, all the demigods. Tamasam, material elements. Indriyam, the senses. Srije, I create. Ete, all of these. Vayam, we. Yasya, of whom? Vashe, under the control. Maha Atmanaha, great personalities. Sthitaha, situated. Shakuntaha, vultures. Iva, like. Sutra Yantrita, bound by rope. Mahan, the Mahatattva. Aham, I. Vaikrita, the demigods. Tamasa, the five material elements. Indriya, senses. Srijama, we create. Sarve, all of us. Yat, of whom? Anugrahat, by the mercy. Idam, the material world. Translation. From the Supreme Personality of Godhead appears Lord Brahma, whose body is made from the total material energy, the reservoir of intelligence predominated by the passionate mode of material nature. From Lord Brahma, I myself am born as a representation of false ego known as Rudra. By my own power, I create all the other demigods, the five elements and the senses. Therefore, I worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who's greater than any of us and under whose control are situated all the demigods, material elements and senses, and even Lord Brahma and I myself, like birds bound by a rope. Only by the Lord's grace can we create, maintain and annihilate the material world. Therefore, I offer my respectful obeisances unto the Supreme Being. Please repeat clearly. From the Supreme Personality of Godhead appears Lord Brahma, whose body is made from the total material energy, the reservoir of intelligence, predominated by the passionate mode of material nature. From Lord Brahma, I myself am born as a representation of false ego known as Rudra. By my own power, I create all the other demigods, the five elements and the senses. Therefore, I worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who's greater than any of us and under whose control are situated all the demigods, material elements and senses, and even Lord Brahma and I myself, like birds bound by a rope. Only by the Lord's grace can we create, maintain and annihilate the material world. Therefore, I offer my respectful obeisances unto the Supreme Being. Mahaprabhu, by His Divine Grace, Esi Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada ki. A summary of creation is given in this verse. From Sankarsana, Mahavishnu expands, and from Mahavishnu, Garbhodakashaya Vishnu expands. Lord Brahma, who was born of Garbhodakashaya Vishnu, fathers Lord Shiva, from whom all the other demigods gradually evolve. Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, and Lord Vishnu are incarnations of the different material qualities. Lord Vishnu is actually above all material qualities, but he accepts control of Sattvaguna, the mode of goodness, to maintain the universe. Lord Brahma is born under the Mahatattva. Brahma creates the entire universe. Lord Vishnu maintains it, and Lord Shiva annihilates it. The Supreme Personality of Godhead controls all the most important demigods, especially Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva, exactly as the owner of a bird controls it by binding it with a rope. Sometimes vultures are controlled in this way. Om Agyanantam Rindasya Gyananjana Shalakya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Vishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Padamaha Padanti Swapadanti Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. So this particular chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam, well actually the whole Canto 5, Chapter 17, The Descent of River Ganges. Interestingly, the whole nomenclature of the fifth canto is very hard to conceive, especially when we are steeped in the observable reality of the universe. There is a difference between the observable reality and the nomenclature quoted by Srimad Bhagavatam, which is unobservable. So the phenomenal world and the observable world, they are realities, they are both realities. But how do we compromise such a situation? Great personalities like Lord Shiva and major demigods who maintain the universe, they are able to observe this very nicely. Unfortunately, because we have fallen in tamondham, or under the darkness of the material illusion, we are not able to observe the true reality. So the fifth canto is very elaborate that way. The Srimad Bhagavatam talks about the beautiful pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and while talking about these pastimes, the Srimad Bhagavatam also touches upon 10 subject matters. Those 10 subject matters are varied. For example, creation, sarga, then the sub-creation, visarga, then the third aspect is sthanam. Sthanam is about all the planetary manifestations. Then comes poshanam, manvantara, etc. So this gets covered under sthanam, which is basically all the planetary systems in the material world. It's very difficult or very hard to comprehend because we're so deluded under the material modes of nature. So Prabhupada explains in this verse how it is as if we are bound by a rope. We're all bound by the ropes of the material modes. So when we comprehend, or we try to analyze or comprehend the fifth canto in terms of the Bhumandala, the amazing landmass, the shell of the universe, all the tracts of land, all the amazing personalities living in these different tracts of land, it is very difficult. Therefore, some or other, Krishna sends personalities, Muninam, who come and explain the situation to us in a very nice and elaborate way, so that we can shed these inhibitions and doubts and surrender. So, the Supreme Lord Shiva, for example, he's specifically talking about his own position and Lord Brahma's position within this causal manifestation. Lord Shiva's position is extraordinary, extraordinary. If you look at that personality, he's got matted locks, he's got powder all around his face, ash powder, that's his makeup. Lord Shiva's makeup is ash. And then he wears some kind of tiger skin, and these are his clothing. Can you imagine that? And then he's got a vahana, not a car, but a bull. And that is his vahana. And at the same time, he's completely in opulence, completely in opulence. So if you go through the Srimad Bhagavatam, Mahesh Dham is considered even more opulent than even most of the heavenly planets, even Satyaloka, even more opulent than Satyaloka, Mahesh Dham. And there Shiva resides. He's in the midst of opulence. Why? Because Rama Devi, Parvati, she is the controller of the summum bonum of all material energy. She is the controller of Devi Dham, of all opulences, or all material opulences. It is actually explained that Shivaloka or Mahesh Dham is so opulent that all the mountains and the mountain peaks are made of silver, gold, diamonds. The ocean is so sparkling, and when they touch the sands are not made of normal sand. They're made of diamond powder. They're made of gold powder. So opulent. And in the midst of all this opulence, Lord Shiva is sitting covered in ash and going to Samshan Ghat, or, you know, the graveyard where he sometimes goes. And he's constantly immersed in chanting the names of Sankarsana. And Parvati asked him, Keno Payana Laguna Vishnor Nama Sahasrakam. Why are you constantly chanting the holy names of the Supreme Lord? Keno Upayana Laguna, Parvati asked. What is this upaya? So what is this solution, my dear Lord? Because there is so much trouble in the material universe. And then Shiva says, Sri Rama Rama Rameti Rame Rame Manorame Sahasranama Tastulyam Ramanama Varanane. By chanting the glorious names of Sri Rama, Sri Shankarsana Balaram, I'm constantly meditating on the Supreme Personality of God. And simply by uttering that one name of Lord Ram is equivalent to chanting thousands of names of Lord Vishnu. So this way, Lord Shiva is giving instructions. And Lord Shiva also is so merciful that he collects all the downtrodden souls, like all the pishashas and the ghosts and the hobgoblins, because nobody else will touch them. So he takes them under his shelter and he protects them. He gives them shelter this way. Shiva is also Ashutosh. He's so very easily pleased, so very easily pleased. But the problem is, when you get benedictions from Lord Shiva, I remember my grandparents once told me, Shiva Sampati Kulanashaha. They said, if you accept benedictions from Lord Shiva, your entire kula, your entire generation can be completely wiped out. So whenever we used to go to Lord Shiva's temples, we would worship him, propitiate, and then when we were returning back, my parents would tell me, remove even that small speck of grain of sand from your feet. Wipe it. You don't want to take anything from Lord Shiva. So that way he bestows, but at the same time, if you see 60 to 80% of the personalities who take something from Lord Shiva have always been in trouble. So better not to take anything from him. But yes, when Lord Shiva says, Sahasranama Tastulyam Ramanama Varanne, that we have to take. We have to take from Lord Shiva. So this way, Lord Shiva is residing in this dham, which has so many multifarious opulences. And this is all the opulence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The entire Mahatattva, the entire cosmic creation, Parashya Shaktir, Vividhaiva Shruyate, these are all but a spark of the Supreme Lord's multifarious energies. Vividhaiva Shruyate, multifarious. So this way we come to understand that this entire material manifestation is only a spark of Krishna's energy. Eko Amshena Stitho Jagat. So, how do we understand the multifarious tracts of land that we have, known as the Bhumandala in the fifth canto? We understand that it is actually completely covered by the waters of the causal ocean, completely covered by water. And the sun god, it is because of his supreme mercy and manifestation that certain portions of the water are evaporated, and some tracts of land are visible. There is land everywhere. The land mass is under the sea as well. And some of them are so intensely huge that they cover the entire tract of oceans. And the top, the peaks of these land masses are what we completely know as continents or countries. They're actually huge mountain masses. In fact, it is explained that the Himalayas are only a small tract. They're only the tip of the iceberg. There are even bigger and bigger mountains. There are three sections of mountains, the Srimad Bhagavatam explains. The Himalayas are actually the lower section. There is a middle section, and there is even a higher section. And in between the middle section and the lower section, there is something known as Kandagiri. Kandagiri means magnetic mountain. Have you heard of this? Kandagiri, Kanta in Sanskrit means magnet. There's a whole mountain made of magnet. And it can attract anything metallic and completely smash it. And it also intensely generates a huge amount of heat. So these mountains we cannot see because we are not allowed to see. We're just not allowed to see in this particular material body. So when we're not allowed to see, therefore, we become so deluded and we say, oh, they don't exist. The scientists, they are not aware. They therefore proclaim that these things don't exist. Meru Mountain, completely made of gold, housing the demigods. The Ganga falls on the Meru Mountain and then divides herself into four quarters, into four parts, and then falls into the Bhumandala. So all this is described, especially in the Descent of River Ganges chapter. So this way, we try to comprehend simply because the authorities or the acharyas have proclaimed this through their experience, we also experience. So, certain personalities like Arjuna, the Pandavas, they were able to experience this. In fact, Bhishma Deva suggests that the only reason why the Pandavas were so strong and they were able to experience everything transcendental was because of tapasya. The nature of tapasya, their ability to control their minds and senses and to perform austerities. Because they were able to perform austerities with impunity, therefore they were able to see all these wonderful personalities like demigods and yakshas. In fact, the Surya Siddhanta explains that there are 64 dimensions to this universe. So within the material shell, there are 14 worlds. And within these 14 worlds, the Surya Siddhanta explains there are 64 dimensions. We know only three dimensions. In fact, the Kimpurushas live in the fourth dimension. Then the Yakshas live in the fifth dimension. Like that, there are so many dimensions where these personalities live. It's explained that the Kim Purushas are actually personalities in green color, completely green color. They're very heavenly, divine beings. In fact, when the Rajasuya Yajna was being performed, and Yudhishthira sent Bhima and Arjuna to collect oblations, to collect Lakshmi from different parts of the world, different parts of the universe, Bhima went towards the Kim Purusha Loka. And these Kim Purusha Loka denizens, these Vasis, who were green in color, said, "My dear Bhima, you cannot approach this place because you're not allowed to. So please respect the rules of material energy and creation. We will give you so much Lakshmi, please take it from us." They also gave him horses that were green in color for the Yajna, for the Rajasuya Yajna. The Kim Purushas also have very long horse-like ears, it's explained. So there are these wonderful personalities. In fact, at one stage, the Pandavas, when they were in Banavas or incognito, they were moving in different forests, Kubera took them to another level of the universe where the Yakshas live. And this is somewhere between, even higher than Badrikashrama and slightly lower than the second level that I mentioned about of the Himalayan mountains. There they were living in a wonderful palace and about 3,000 yakshas were serving them, but they were not even visible to the eyes, these yakshas. And the potency of the yakshas was so wonderful that they could move space. In the material world, we can move air, and therefore we are able to fly airplanes to some extent. We are able to go from one point to the other by moving air. But the yakshas know how to move space. If I want that mridanga to be here, in an instant, they're able to fold that space, they're able to delete that space in an instant and bring that concept, that whole mridanga down here. In the scientific community, they've touched this in quantum physics to some extent, in quantum mechanics. They've touched it to some extent. For example, I have one karathal here. This is one object. But within that karathal, there can be 200 karathalas residing in there at the same time, at the same place. And then you can utilize sound vibration to remove one particular karathal. And using that sound vibration, you can manifest that object and make it do certain other things. Ashwatthama did that, for example. He took a blade of grass, and utilizing this concept of quantum physics, he utilized sound vibration, and he manifested that as nuclear energy. And then he aimed it at the unborn progeny of the Pandavas. He could do that. So we've lost that kind of technology. So the Yakshas were completely immersed in that kind of technology. They could completely delete or fold space and bring in objects. And that way, all these numerous objects, Yudhishthira would just have to think, oh, I want some water. And immediately, water would come and manifest in front of him. So this is amazing technology. So similarly, one day, even from a higher elevated system of the Yakshas, one flower fell down, Saugandhika flower. And then Draupadi saw this beautiful flower, and then she was immersed in that smell, and she really liked it. And so Bhima set forth immediately, saying, I will go and bring this flower. And he climbed. He started climbing even from that Yaksha platform to even higher platform. And there, of course, he met one old monkey lying there. And so as the story goes, as history goes, he wanted to... The Kshatriyas and the Brahmanas, they never cross another living entity. They never cross an animal. They never cross a human being. And they never even cross a Vaishnava. It's considered very sinful. So they're very careful about that. And Bhima was a Kshatriya. And he said, oh, monkey, I don't want to cross your tail. Please remove it. He was a bit haughty and puffed up because this was just an ordinary monkey. But the monkey was in Yaksha Loka enjoying wonderful bananas, transcendental bananas. And the monkey said, I'm too old. You lift my tail and put it away. So Bhima said, oh, don't waste my time. And he just wanted to flick the tail and throw it away. He just couldn't lift it. It was so strong, this tail. So he tried and tried and tried with all his energy. And then finally he had to give up. And suddenly there was a tiny, tiny little space between the tail. So he just squeezed his fingers in there and tried to lift it. But his fingers got jammed, got stuck. It was so heavy. Finally, he had to take a very humble position and then pray, my dear monkey, you're not an ordinary monkey. Please tell me who you are. I'm extremely sorry because I was very puffed up. And then the monkey revealed his true form as Hanuman. I'm actually your older brother. And then this way, Hanuman gave benedictions to Bhima. And then Bhima was able to get lots of strength, and he actually fought some Yakshas, and then he was able to bring that flower back to Draupadi. So this way, there are so many realms in this material world, so many realms that we cannot even comprehend or understand. So this kind of technology is lost completely to us. Therefore, we use the most simple and the most basic technology available to us completely through the mercy of the Lord. In fact, Krishna explains, Kama Vishita Bhutani Dharyayami Aham Ojasa, he says in the Bhagavad Gita. Gama Vishesha Bhutani, he says, I am upholding everything. I'm upholding the entire cosmic manifestation. Dharyayami, I'm supporting it with what? Aham Ojasa. Ojasa is actually very fine air, very fine air. We were just discussing how there is air that we can move or manipulate. In Bhakti Vaibhava course, you'll probably get more details. This particular air, Ojasa, is a direct resultant of Kanti, of Krishna Kanti, the emanation of Krishna, the light that manifests from Krishna's transcendental body. This Kanti, because it's light, it generates heat energy also. And it's a very subtle transcendental heat energy. From this heat energy comes very subtle air. And that air is called Ojasa. And what this Ojasa does, it basically strings the entire planetary cosmic manifestations and holds them. Krishna is known as Vishnu. Why? Because Yam Pravishanti Iti Vishnu, he enters into all these systems. Therefore, because he enters and sustains, he's known as Vishnu. Yam Pravishanti, Pravishanti means enter. So this Ojasa is like a string of air that holds all these different planetary systems together. And the demigods can travel through this Ojasa from one place, one continent, one planet to the other. It's like a road. That's how Arjuna traveled with Krishna in this particular pathway, the Ojasa. Bhima was able to travel this way from one planet to the other to accumulate Lakshmi for the Rajasiya sacrifice. If the demigods moved away from the path, well, finished, they would fall into outer space. And there's a whole description as to how even the demigods have to give up their body. They fall from the heavenly planets and they fall into space, and there are yakshas and danavas waiting for them. And they just simply catch them and tear their bodies and consume them. That's how they die. So that's another story. But there are these amazing pathways, and we can actually, with proper siddhi, with proper potency, go through these pathways to different planetary systems. But it's very practical. We're not allowed to do so. Trishanku wanted to go to the heavenly planets. So Vishwamitra created this wonderful heavenly planet, Bila Swarga. But he couldn't sustain it. Why? Because Vishnu did not enter that particular planet. Poshanam, which is the next level of the Srimad Bhagavatam, talks about how Lord Vishnu sustains everything. So because Vishwamitra was not able to sustain that particular Bila Swarga, so it was nearly crashing down, and then he had to, with due humility, worship the Supreme Lord. Says, please, now you enter and you sustain it. And that's how Vishnu came and sustained the Bila Swarga. So this way, the sun, which is also part of the heavenly planet, he manifests his untold mercy on the landmass. And you can see how the landmass is available or present because the sun evaporates portions of the causal ocean of the water, and you're able to live there in this land. And that evaporated water, the sun very carefully places within the landmass so that the Poshanam aspect of the Supreme Lord can be fulfilled also. So this is advanced science. In fact, the scientists actually accept that the entire landmass is moving gently towards the north. And that is already explained in the Shastras, that because of the sun and the movement of the air and the oceans, this landmass is gently moving towards the north. So all these different tracts of land that you see, New Zealand, Australia, at one point of time, they were all a part of Greater India, at the southern tip of India. And because of the Surya Deva's potency, the sun's potency, these land tracts have moved to different locations. So the water is always covering the landmass, but at the same time, the water is receding in certain parts of the landmass so that the living entities can always live in these portions and then continue with whatever they have to, their tapasya, their remembrance of the Supreme Personality. So this way, technically, the entire cosmic manifestation is so perfect, so wonderful. Therefore, the opulences of the Supreme Lord is considered immeasurable. It's considered so wonderful that wonderful personalities like Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma are constantly meditating on the Supreme Lord and constantly meditating and constantly saying, what person desiring perfection will not worship the Lord? That's what Lord Shiva is saying. So if you desire perfection, then that perfection is attained by simply following the Mahajanas, by simply following the authorities, because they're already perfect. They've perfected their lives. And therefore, they're giving us this solution in a very simple and nice manner. How? Kenu Payana Laguna Vishnur Nama Sahasrakam. Shiva says, simply chant the glories of the Supreme Lord. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So this is a very wonderful manifestation. In fact, Antyastham Yasya Vishvam Sura Nara Kakagho Bogi Gandharva Daityahi. The Vedic literature explains, in the end, there may be multifarious lands, there may be so many wonderful tracts of lands, there may be heavenly planets, there may be suras, there may be naras, there may be kakagho, bogi, gandharva, there are gandharvas, there are yakshas, there are kinnaras, there are kempurushas. There are so many, so many different personalities in this material world. Why? Because the entire manifestation goes through a hierarchy. There is a hierarchical system in this material universe. The living entities follow a hierarchy and they're getting better and better and better in terms of evolution. This is evolution, not Darwin's theory of evolution. Anthastam yasya vishvam sura naraka kagho bohi gandharva daityahi chitram ramram yatetam tribhuvanavabhusham vishnu isham namami. So what are all these living entities in all these different tracts of land supposed to do? Chitram ramram yatetam. We're simply meant to be immersed in ram, ramyate, rama. Enjoy. What enjoyment? Tripuvanavabhusham vishnumisham namami. Simply chanting the Supreme Lord's glories and His holy name. That is our entertainment and that is perfection. So this way, Lord Shiva is giving instructions. Lord Brahma is giving instructions. All the demigods, they cannot see the Supreme Lord directly. They all go to this planet where Dhruva Maharaj is the ruler. And there, in Shvetadvipa, the ocean of milk, even in that ocean of milk, there is wonderful landmass. And there the Supreme Lord is residing. And then all the demigods go to the Supreme Lord because they are in trouble and because they cannot see the Lord in the ocean of milk. And when they pray to Him, Om Sahasra Shirsha Purusha Sahasraksha Sahasrapata, that way they're chanting the Purusha Sukta prayers. What happens? Tene Brahma Hridaya Adikavayai Muhyanti Yatsuraya. So the Lord comes and enters the heart of Brahma. Brahma Hridaya Adikavaya. And then instructs Lord Brahma that yes, I'm going to come and subsequently perform my poshanam, my sustenance, so that I can sustain all the living entities and protect them. And then Lord Brahma comes and approaches all the demigods and then he ensures them, he tells them, he gives them this message of Lord Krishna, just as Lord Krishna gave this message through in his heart. So this way, even the Srimad Bhagavatam has manifested that way. The Srimad Bhagavatam has manifested. The Supreme Lord has given this information to Lord Brahma, then Brahma has given it to Vyasadeva, and from Vyasadeva we have received it so wonderfully. Therefore, Lord Shiva is stating, oh, how wonderful this is, how wonderful. Lord Shiva is constantly hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam, always. He leaves no opportunity at all. 430 years ago, there is a temple in Kerala. And in the temple, there is a Shiva temple, and then opposite the Shiva temple is a Krishna temple. So, in the Krishna temple, they were having wonderful Bhagavatam class. And the reciter of the Bhagavatam was a very wonderful devotee. What happened? The pujari of the Shiva temple thought, oh, so many people are going to this Vishnu temple. So if I invite that Purohit to come here and chant the glories of the Bhagavatam in the Shiva temple, then all the devotees will come here also. That will be wonderful. How glorious. So he invited him down here. Then what happened? This devotee took the Srimad Bhagavatam. He was describing the pastimes of Lord Varaha. And he started reciting these pastimes. And then towards the end of the day, he came to, I don't know, maybe the 10th chapter or the 20th chapter. And then he stopped there. And then the next morning, he was supposed to have started from where he left off. And then he sees that his entire book was folded back to page 1. He was surprised. Oh, I thought I'd finished 20 chapters. Why am I on page 1? Oh, maybe it's the Lord's will. So let me start all over again. So he started narrating the pastimes of Lord Varahadev right from page 1. And then next morning he came and this happened again. So this way it happened for 18 days. And he had to narrate Lord Varahadev's pastimes again and again and again. By the 18th day, there were not many people inside. Most of them had left. And then when he finished narrating these pastimes, there was a great sound from inside the altar room. Haribol! Haribol! How wonderful! How glorious! I wanted to hear these pastimes of Lord Varahadev again and again because nobody comes and narrates Srimad Bhagavatam in the Shiva temple in front of me. They only narrate Srimad Bhagavatam in the Vishnu temple across. So now that you're here, it was so wonderful for me that I had to narrate. I wanted to hear this again and again. So it was me who came and turned those pages. And turned it back to page 1. Now you may continue from the 10th chapter onward. So this way, Lord Shiva is constantly hearing the glories of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So this is very wonderful. So like I mentioned in the beginning, it is very difficult for us living entities to comprehend such situations. We cannot comprehend Meru Mountain. We cannot even comprehend what's happening in front of our eyes. So the geography that we are studying today is absolutely wrong. It's completely terribly wrong. We are forced to study the geography. We can take an airplane, and when we're moving in the airplane and we're looking out the window, what do we see? We see some ocean, we see some landmass that we are aware of. But the landmass that we're not aware of, we can't see because the material energy is moving it away from our eyesight very clearly. So this way, we're bewildered. We're not able to see Mount Meru. In fact, the Sri Lanka that we have, that we are aware of, Ceylon, is not the actual Lanka. The original Lanka of Ravana was about 800 miles away from India, 800 miles away. And it's explained in the Ramayana very clearly that there are three peaks in that landmass of Ravana, Lanka, three peaks, and they're known as Trikuta. And this Trikuta mountain is actually a small portion of the Sumeru mountain. Therefore, the Trikuta mountain, the whole of Lanka was actually made of gold. The whole landmass of Lanka is actually gold. And then just as I mentioned in the beginning, the ocean covers certain tracts of land and then opens up certain tracts of land. That way, with the help of Surya, that particular landmass of Lanka is actually down below the ocean, the sea. So we're not able to see it. So this way we're not able to see Mount Meru, we're not able to see all the other wonderful mountains. Therefore, it's explained that because of our position of being completely blind, we have to take the shelter of Guru, we have to take the shelter of Srila Prabhupada, we have to take the shelter of the devotees, we have to take the shelter of Sadhu and Shastra, and we have to take the shelter of the chanting of the holy name. That way we will be able to see eventually. So this is the potency of Supreme Personality of Godhead. So just as I mentioned that there are ropes holding on to the different planetary system, the ropes of air, similarly, we are also bound by these ropes of the material energy. And it's been likened to a vulture. Prabhupada says, just as a vulture is controlled by the master by a small little rope. Similarly, living entities like us, we're also controlled by the Supreme Lord and His multifarious energies. So this is so wonderful, the Srimad Bhagavatam explains that, Lord Shiva explains, there are so many qualities amongst all material qualities, there are spiritual qualities, but at the end of the day, the bottom line is, we are all subservient to the Supreme Lord Sri Hari. Shiva himself proclaims very clearly, very categorically. So what is the harm in accepting that? There's absolutely no harm. So this is really wonderful. And therefore, because this is wonderful, again and again, these great personalities are saying, oh, how wonderful. Therefore, I offer my absolute obeisances to the Supreme Personality of God. How wonderful. So thank you. I will end my class here. And if there are any questions, or suggestions, or if you want to correct my mistakes, please go. Prabhu.
It's interesting. And the pathways, the oldest path.
Wormholes, yes. Yes.
I'm wondering if you consider these pathways of the
suggest something analogous, or outsiders find something and they speak positively?
Sorry, what was the last question? Well, the scientists are on to something, but they still have a long way to go. Stephen Hawking talks about wormholes. They talk about folding the universe. They talk about this current universe being a holographic representation of the actual universe. So there are lots of these scientific theories. Unfortunately, at this point of time, they are still theories because they have not taken the faith to accept the Srimad Bhagavatam ad verbatim. They have not done that yet. So it's going to take them eons and eons and eons even to contemplate, even to figure out what this is all about. For example, they say it's going to take us 4 light years to even go to the moon planet. 4 light years is a long time. It'll take us 400 years, let's say, to even reach the moon planet. Which means you have to give up your body to go to the moon planet anyway. 400 years, are we going to live? But the Srimad Bhagavatam already states that you still have to give up your body to go to the moon planet anyway. So why do you want to waste your time calculating light years? You can't go to the moon planet in this particular body. Your spirit soul can go, but you need to have another body to reach that particular planetary system. That's already explained. So why do you want to reinvent the wheel? So similarly, they talk about black holes, they talk about wormholes. There are different siddhis, Prapti Siddhi, Lagima Siddhi, Anima Siddhi. We've lost that technology. So Prapti Siddhi, how does it work? We fold water into air, we fold air into, you know, earth, we fold earth into ether. So when these elements are folded, then we reach out to the next planet, procure whatever object that you desire, refold the elements and bring it back here in front of you. So that's prapti. So we've lost the technology because manda sumanda matayor manda bhagya hipadrata prayan alpayusha sabya kalavasmin yuge jana. So we are completely, completely deluded by the influence of this material energy. We've become lazy. Manda sumanda matayor. We're even more lazy, ultra lazy. Not just lazy, but extremely lazy. Manda bhagya. Our luck has diminished so drastically. So this is a very precarious, very pitiable situation. And in this pitiable situation, we want to become frog. We want to become Dr. Frog. So what happens? The concept of the universe is so, so, so huge that within this limited scope of our existence, we are unable to anticipate. We are unable to even understand the macrocosm of the whole thing. At the microcosmic level, yes, we understand. Why? Because the Srimad Bhagavatam narrates it to us, that there are pathways to go from one portion of the universe to the other. At the macrocosmic level, very difficult to understand. Very difficult. Therefore, we take the shelter, poshanam, we take the shelter of the Supreme Personality of God. So yes, in quantum science, quantum physics, they're making inroads. They will come to that conclusion eventually, but it'll take years and years and years. For example, they've understood something in quantum science called the two-slit theory experiment. Have you heard of the two-slit theory experiment? Anybody? If you emanate a photon source from one end, you emanate a photon source, and you have a barrier in the middle, and there's one slit, and the photon source moves from that barrier and hits the other side, it takes the form of that slit. So it's just like shooting a whole lot of marbles from one side. It moves through that particular slit. And then on the other side, on that wall, you find a big line equivalent to the slit, a lot of marbles, or the imprint of marbles. So the photon source acted like that. When you manifest that photon source, it goes through that slit, hits the other side, and then you have that shape of the slit. But they put another slit out here to see how it would react. This is known as the wave-particle duality theory. The photon source is a particle, and when it enters these two slits, it suddenly behaves like a wave. So when a wave enters a barrier, and then suddenly there are openings for the wave to go to the other side, then all these waves multiply, and then the end result is not one slit or two slits, but tens of different shapes of those slits. So this is very confusing for them. They said, how is it happening? Because when the photon source is just particle, when it goes to the other side via these two slits, we should get the shape of two slits on the opposite side. But this is multiple slits and it's acting like waves. So this is known as a wave-particle duality theory in quantum physics. What they did was they put another attachment to observe this particular phenomenon. They wanted to observe it. The moment they put the observation in place, what happened? It was as if these photons knew that they were being observed. So when they did this experiment of throwing the photon through the two slits again, what did they see on the other end? Two slits, the shape of two slits. So this is very confusing for them. Anoraniyam mahato mayam, Krishna says, I'm within every living entity. I can become the smallest of the smallest. So the Goswamis, the Acharyas, they've already explained to us that even in the smallest of the smallest, Krishna's present. So you go and try to observe him within the observable reality scope of things, naturally you're going to get completely deluded and completely confused. So therefore, the scientists have a lot of time to reach that sort, to reach that phase. Here is a question from Mayapur Online. Please explain the difference between Brahma's night and total annihilation of the material world. What does it mean? And what are the different annihilations between total destruction and the end of the kalpa of the... Sorry, it's a bit confusing, but I get the gist of the question. There are three types of pralaya. There are three types of pralaya. One is called sharira pralaya. The sharira pralaya is basically the dissolution of what you know as a living entity of the complete universe. I'm in this body, I have my relations and I have my friends, I go to work, I earn some money, and then I have children, and I'm making friends. So this is going on. So that actually is a very tiny universe of the living entity. So when you give up this material body, that is known as sharira pralaya, because there is complete dissolution of what you know as your personal universe. Then comes the next level of universe, including Lord Brahma and all the planetary systems. There is one particular dissolution there where Lord Brahma, when it's the time of dissolution, then he leaves. For this particular Brahma at least leaves for the spiritual world. There's dissolution and then he comes back and creates it. Then there is one Maha Pralaya. That is complete dissolution when everything goes and immerses into the Supreme Lord back again. He breathes in and he breathes out that way. So that is Maha Pralaya. There is complete dissolution. Not disillusion, but dissolution. What else is the question? Brahma's night. Yes, Brahma's, our 360 days is equivalent to half a day of Brahma, isn't it? Half a day? Sorry, I'm a bit confused here. Maybe somebody could help me out. I know that 6 months of our year is half. One Divya Yuga is 1,000 cycles, 1 day of Brahma. Another 1,000 cycles, yes. That's a calculation. Mm-hmm. Yes. So we can see that we are just a tiny speck in this material world, just a tiny speck. And on top of that, we are time bound. How are we time bound? There is Kala Chakra. Kala Chakra is rotating on top. If you look at the structure of the universe, you have Bhur, Bhuva and Swaha. So you have the Bhumandala, which is the Bhur, Bhu. Then you have the Bhuva Loka and the Swarga Loka. Somewhere in between these two tracks, there is Kala Chakra. The Kala Chakra is just above the sun and the moon and some of the stars rotating. As the Kala Chakra rotates, as time rotates, the cyclic wheel of time, as we call it, the sun and the moon are also rotating. The Bhumandala is stable, it's steady, it's not rotating. But as the Kala Chakra rotates, apparently, although the sun and the moon are going the clockwise direction, because of the influence of the Kala Chakra, it looks like the sun and the moon are moving in the anti-clockwise direction. Then what happens? Ayu harati vai pumsam, udhyam ashtam chayannasau, tasyarthe yat chanorita uttama shloka vartaya, Srimad Bhagavatam statement. Ayu harati vai pumsam, as the sun moves from the east to the west, what happens? Immediately, the sun, in the form of time, takes away your ayu. Ayu means your lifespan. Harati. Harati means kidnap, take away by force. Ayu harati vai pumsam. Udhyam ashtam. Udhyam means the sun rising. Ashtam means the sun setting. Udhyam ashtam cha yannisau. Tasya arthe yat kshano ritha. So this whole life cycle simply passes like a kshana. Kshana means a fraction of a few seconds. Fraction. It just passes away. Therefore, what do we have to do? Therefore, there's only one activity we must do. Tasyarthe yat kshano ritha uttama shloka. Uttama shloka is what? Who's uttama shloka? Who, all the glorifications done about the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Purushottama. Uttama shloka vartaya. Vartaya means simply chanting the words, the beautiful names of the Supreme Lord. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So this wonderful philosophy Srila Prabhupada has given us. So therefore, because it's wonderful, because it's always victorious, this philosophy is always victorious. Therefore, we simply say Jai. Don't we say Jai every day? Victory, victory. Why? Because this whole process will only lead us to victory. Only lead us to the service of the Supreme Lord. That is most victorious. Jai, we say. Srimad Bhagavatam ki?
Jai.
Any other question?
With Sri Lanka, because there is so many places of connected to the pastimes of Rama on current Sri Lanka.
In Sri Lanka?
Yeah, on Ceylon or Sri Lanka, there are several places of connected with the pastimes.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned there is, actually it's not the actual Sri Lanka.
Sri Lanka. Yes, the Lanka that we see right now, Sri Lanka as we know it, is not the real Sri Lanka. That is just a small mass of land broken away from the original Bharatavarsha. That is not the original Lanka of where Ramachandra went. The yojanas are given exactly 800 miles. That is the difference. That landmass is already submerged. We can't see it. In fact, it's explained just like there are Himalayas, there are extensions of the Himalayas towards Australia and New Zealand as well. We can't see it. We just can't see it. Does that mean it's not there? Because our senses cannot perceive it. We cannot see the next dimension. When an ant moves on the floor, it cannot perceive us. It cannot see or perceive us till you go close to it, and then it feels as if there's a whole pralaya for the ant, and then they go helter-skelter. They cannot perceive us. Similarly, we cannot even perceive the Kimpurushas, the Yakshas, the Kinnaras, within who are very close to our dimensions. Sometimes from the ninth dimension, the ghosts come and enter our dimension. That we can perceive sometimes. Because it's completely against the material rules, the rules of nature. So, because the landmass is completely covered by the ocean, and sometimes the sun god, out of complete mercy, removes that water from that landmass so that we can perform our duties by being contained within that landmass. It's always changing.
I was just wondering, there is so many temples of Rama and on Lanka, there are many temples also, they are even worshipping Ravana there, and
yes,
there is Ashoka
the
Forest.
The influence is very strong. If you go to Bali, there is complete Ramayana going on there. Ilavrata Varsha, Bharata Varsha was a very massive tract of land. It was very huge. Then these tracts of land did break because of the influence of the motion of the oceans, the wind and the sun god. Because of their influence, these different tracts of land split apart. But the influence of the culture is still visible. In Bali you go, near Indonesia, Ramayana is so powerful. I went to Thailand recently, not recently, about 5 years ago. When I entered the Bangkok airport, what do I see? I see the churning of the ocean, a huge, beautiful, beautiful diorama of the churning of the ocean. very intricately carved, so beautiful. So the influence of the Vedic culture is so prevalent, why even the Pandavas have traveled to such places, like even Australia, all these places, the Pandavas have traveled. The Pandavas have traveled, Bhima especially traveled even via Russia. There are explanations, he traveled via Russia. Bhima's known as Su, what's Bhima's name, the other name? Su something, Suyena or something like that. So all the progeny of Bhima in these different countries, their names are Su, they are with Su. So if you go to Indonesia, they have Suharto, Su something, they're all progeny or the descendants of Bhima. So even in Ukraine, the area, you see a whole lot of names beginning with Su. All descendants of Bhima are the influence of that Vedic culture. So the entire world is prevalent with Vedic culture, no doubt about that. So if you go to Bali, Indonesia, Sri Lanka, of course, you will have resemblances of Vedic culture. The Angkor Wat temple in Cambodia, there is a Vishnu temple in Cambodia. Raja Ravi Varman, I think he built it.
Another question, Anik, that Brahma, you are explaining these two distractions, the pralaya, and you mentioned something that Brahma, there is one distraction that he leaves material universe,
yes,
and he comes back.
Yes. Yeah, there is, like I mentioned, there are three types of pralaya. The middle pralaya is not complete annihilation or destruction of everything manifest and unmanifest. That is the pralaya within the control of Brahma. So up till the, which loka is it, where the sages live? So up till that loka, there will be inundation, complete inundation by the causal water, causal ocean. All the sages move over to Brahmaloka and they live there when that is happening. So at that point of time, everything else is inundated within the causal ocean. Then the Mahapralaya, everyone goes into Mahavishnu, including even the Brahmas. But this particular Brahma of our universe is a devotee of the Supreme Lord. He's a devotee of the Supreme Lord. He's transcendental, this particular Brahma of our universe. So he's immersed in the pastimes of the Supreme Lord. So there are three types of pralaya.
Did you mention that he goes to spiritual world when there is this partial destruction?
No. The Mahatattva destruction, at that time he goes to the spiritual world. I may have mistakenly said that, but when you have the partial destruction, then all the sages go to Brahmaloka and they reside there. And there is partial destruction up till the loka of the sages. So that is explained in the Bhagavatam as well. Thank you so much. Srimad Bhagavatam Mahapuram Ki Jai. Hare Krishna.